For those of you that are with us this evening that have not been part of the ongoing seminar, I'll bring you up to speed a little bit. During this Thanksgiving holiday, I've been speaking on the verses, consecutive verses of the second chapter of the first canto Srimad Bhagavatam. And there's a reason for selecting that second chapter. It's an essence of the entire first canto, and for that matter, the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. The whole of Srimad Bhagavatam is Shukadev Goswami speaking to Maharaj Parikshit. The format is questions and answers. Before Shukadev Goswami begins speaking, the first canto is Suta Goswami, who heard that dialogue, that exchange between Shukadev Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit. He was amongst the sages in the audience who heard Shukadev Goswami present Srimad Bhagavatam, and what he heard was then repeated in disciplic succession to another group of sages. So the format of that dialogue is questions and answers. And at the very beginning of the first chapter of first canto, besides the Mangalacharana verses, there's a presentation about, by the sages, expressing the superlative qualifications of Suta Goswami. And by way of doing that, we're given instruction, what's the qualification for a speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam? And then the sages present six questions in that first chapter. And in the second chapter, there's answers, second and third chapter. So we've been covering the second chapter, but the context of it is also specific questions the sages asked. The first two questions were, what's the all-around ultimate good for all living beings in all circumstances of existence? That's like a super question. And the answer that's given is devotional service. Savai pung sang paro dharmo yato bhaktir adhoksaje paradharma. As being specifically devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Lord who's beyond this material realm, but who can receive our service because he's the source of everything. We use those things that he's the source of in service to the source, the personality of Godhead. And that when that service is done without material motivation and without any obstacle that can check it, then in that kind of devotion, that standard of devotional service, then the self is completely satisfied. Yenat ma supersedati. That's the first question, first answer. The next is, out of all the vastness of the Vedic literature, what's the essence, the primary essence of all the Vedas? It's a great question too. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha is the answer. And the process, when properly performed, of its own accord, with no other requirement at all, it causelessly creates or generates or awakens knowledge and detachment. These two are coveted in the world, and particularly within the Vedic literature, jnana and vairagya, this couplet, these two, are much appreciated and valued. So The response Suta Goswami is giving is that knowledge and detachment are a subset. If you can accomplish devotional service to Vasudeva, Krishna, causelessly knowledge and detachment will follow. So the other verses that we've been covering so far, they're expanding the explanation or meaning of those two verses. So far we've covered up through verse 16, where the elaboration has been the essence of what duties are. The essence of duties is to come to this standard of devotional service. And further detailing what that pure devotional service isn't, and what it is, and what its fruits are, and how to achieve it is by the process of hearing and chanting, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. And when one has a strong attraction or taste, enthusiasm for hearing and chanting, then all that is inauspicious is taken away. So then it also describes how that, the last verse that we discussed today, how that enthusiasm or shushrusho shradadhanasya vasudeva katha ruchi syan mahat sevaya vipra punya tirtha nishevanat, how that through the service to great souls who are themselves like places of pilgrimage, they move about the surface of the earth simply to give opportunity to worldly people to hear Krishna Katha. And through that hearing of Krishna Katha and serving those persons who deliver that Krishna Katha, one's attraction for hearing and chanting is awakened. So this is a little different format than we had projected before, but can you see okay in the back? Better if the light goes down? There goes the light down. Okay, that's good. That's good. So within this verse, I just recited it, Shushrusho Shraddhanasya. In this verse, text 16, which we discussed this morning session, these four features Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur identifies, that this verse is disclosing the first four stages of bhakti. The first of those stages is one receives mercy. You can't go anywhere in devotional service without receiving mercy from one who is carrying bhakti. And when the carrier of bhakti gives mercy, devotional service begins. Then service is rendered unto those persons who are the distributors of bhakti, and faith awakens. And one then seeks shelter at the lotus feet of a qualified spiritual master. So this is what we covered so far. Quick review. So this evening we'll be covering 17, 18, and 19. So already this text 16, it's very advanced. One has faith, one has seeking shelter at a spiritual master's lotus feet, and this word here, this eagerness, affinity for hearing, becomes established. And as we were discussing, it's when that strong desire or attraction or eagerness for hearing becomes the modality of your hearing, when that eagerness is there, then the sword that can cut the false ego into little pieces becomes very effective. The sword of remembrance of Krishna dismisses the strong material affinity, the hard knot of fruitive attraction that is carrying everybody in this world. So, what happens next? Where do you go from there? Sounds pretty good. But there's an ongoing unfolding of the stages of bhakti. For those of you that are a little familiar with Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada's rendering of Bhagavad Gita in his purports, in the purport for chapter 7, text number 1 of Bhagavad Gita, these next verses, starting with text 17 through 21, they're found in the purport. Here's the Sanskrit, Trinvatasvakata Krishna. When our Bhaktivedanta archives, the group of devotees that take the responsibility of preserving Prabhupada's lectures and morning walk conversations and all of his publication work, they started an exercise of transcribing lectures that Prabhupada gave. And out of all the verses of Bhagavad Gita that Prabhupada spoke about, the one verse that he spoke most often from was chapter 7, text number 1, where this presentation is made, these verses that we're speaking about over the next few classes, because of their prominence. It's summarizing the process of bhakti. Another place it's found is when Prabhupada arrived in the Boston Harbor. He wrote a very beautiful prayer or poem to Krishna, praying to Krishna, "I don't know why you sent me here to this place where there's simply ignorance and passion, and my mission is to deliver the message of pure goodness, Shuddha Sattva. How is it going to be possible?" Then he refers to these verses. It's possible if one follows this sequence of the unfolding of bhakti, beginning with this Srinvatasvakata Krishna, by hearing punya shravana kirtana, spiritual piety becomes established in the heart of even an unqualified person, even a contaminated person, even a sinful person, any living being, even not a person, a spirit soul in a different form of life, just by hearing this transcendental message, transcendental sound vibration, purification takes place. So this is describing the unfolding of bhakti from its seed-like stage that begins with the hearing process. So this is what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has taken, this bhajaneshu, spraha. This word spraha is eagerness. Like in this previous verse, shushrusho is eagerness or great enthusiasm or affinity. This affinity for engaging in direct worship of Krishna. Not just the activity, the process, but the object, Krishna, comes about. Attraction for that. So, going to read a little bit from the purport of this verse. I'll read the translation first. Shri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is Paramatma or Supersoul in everyone's heart, and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, Suhrit Satam, the benefactor of the truthful devotee, He cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who has developed the urge to hear his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. Now this virtuous or punya is described very nicely in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Generally when we hear punya, what it relates to us is material piety. According to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, there are different categories of piety besides material piety. There's what's the phrase? Bhog anmukhi sukriti. Piety that elevates one's potential for material enjoyment or material prosperity. And examples that are classic in Vedic literature are digging wells or planting trees along the side of the road. In our Western culture, it's like opening schools and hospitals and helping little old ladies cross the street and things like that, to little acts of kindness for other persons. That's a piety that has as its fruit material prosperity. Then there's another kind of piety, that's moksha anmukhi sukriti, which is such things as studying a Vedanta sutra and rigidly following vows of austerity and penance. These assist one on the path of achieving liberation or detachment from material enjoyment and becoming situated in Brahman. Then there's bhakti anmukhi sukriti. This is the kind of punya that's being spoken about. Punya shravana kirtana. One becomes, but if you have that spiritual piety, that activities of devotional service, such as hearing and chanting, automatically the other two kinds of fruits, the prosperity and liberation, because devotional service is executed from the platform of liberation. Krishna states that specifically in Bhagavad Gita. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nasochati Nakangsati Samak Sarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. Devotional service is executed from the Brahma Bhuta stage, the spiritual platform. And then beyond, into the realm of diversity of activities in relation to Krishna. This is devotional service. And the activity of hearing and chanting, which is what's being discussed here in this series of verses, hearing Krishna Katha, in itself establishes piety. And precisely, this is what Srila Prabhupada did when he began the Hare Krishna movement. The audience that Srila Prabhupada initially had was not a group of pious people. It was young American counterculture, whatever you want to call them, dropouts from the Lower East Side. And they weren't steeped in piety. Their lives were filled with all kinds of crazy Kali Yuga things. So he, using the metaphor that we used earlier, he made that wet wood into dry wood so he could ignite a fire. By bringing them into the activities, attracting them to the activities of hearing and chanting. And prasadam. My first encounter or meeting with Srila Prabhupada was at the university where I was attending. And I didn't know who Prabhupada was. I didn't know what the Hare Krishna movement was. I didn't even know he was on campus. It was just one of those providential arrangements. I was passing through the student union, and I saw a whole crowd of people around the doorway of the Millard Fillmore room, and where they, you know, from time to time would have somebody come and do something, make some presentation. It was like a big crowd right around the door. So I just like went to check it out and went inside the door, and there was Prabhupada seated on a stage with Allen Ginsberg. There was spotlight on a stage and a lot of people intoxicated, high as a kite. The space was bigger than this space, like twice as big as this space. Yeah. And it was filled with people. And given the circumstance, Prabhupada primarily just chanted, because the audience was intoxicated, frankly, on who knows what, and didn't have the capacity to pay attention to any detailed teaching. So he chanted for about 2 hours. So there was Allen Ginsberg playing on the bongo drums and Prabhupada playing little cartels and just chanting Hare Krishna. But it was so spiritually enlivening that people that were sitting began standing and they began dancing, and they weren't primed. It wasn't choreography, it was spontaneous. Just from hearing the sound of Krishna's holy name, they began dancing. So the kirtan was quite lively, went on for quite some time. And kirtan was over, everyone sat down, and Prabhupada spoke very little, about 10 minutes, just explaining what just happened, Lord Chaitanya's mission, the holy name, and teachings of Bhagavad Gita, and come to our Bhagavad Gita class at 42 Englewood Avenue across from the campus. And that was it. The Sarva Prasadam. So for persons who were steeped in heavy ignorance and maybe a little bit of passion and zero goodness, how to take that audience to the position where they could understand transcendental knowledge is just through hearing and chanting. And gradually, somebody just forwarded to me from Borijan's, he wrote a little biography about his experiences with Srila Prabhupada. Someone forwarded me to the paragraph of the names of the devotees that came from that program where I was going to school, and it's a list of like 30 people who became devotees from one college program. It was a very special time. And the list of names are, it's Trivikram Swami, Gunagrahi Swami, Bhagavan, Bhagavan's wife, Jagadish, Jagadish's wife, Tejas, some of you don't know who he is, but he was a very strong leader in the movement and went to India and served Prabhupada there, myself, Narottamananda, I just saw him in Bombay. He became a college preacher and then a head pujari in Bombay. B.B. Govinda Maharaj started there. I mean, leaders that led Prabhupada's movement all over the world. And many other names I met. Oh, Pralhadananda Swami. All from that, etc. All from that one college program. And it just was on the basis of what's here. Srindatasva Katha Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Hridyan Taksoya Bhadrani Vidhuno Tisaritsatam. And it works. I'm living proof that it works. Still around, so many years later, 40 years later, engaging in the same activity. Because it works. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Portion of his purport on what happens when there's some eagerness for hearing Krishna Katha. Prabhupada writes, "The Lord is reciprocally respondent to his devotees. When he sees that a devotee is completely sincere in getting admittance to the transcendental service of the Lord, and has thus become eager to hear about him, the Lord acts from within in such a way that the devotee may easily go back to Him. The Lord is more anxious to take us back into His kingdom than we can desire. Most of us do not desire at all to go back to Godhead. Only a very few men want to go back to Godhead. But anyone who desires to go back to Godhead, Sri Krishna helps in all respects. So, by association, it's, Prabhupada explains in the purport, Krishna is supremely virtuous, and by associating with Krishna through the hearing and chanting process, we absorb that quality of virtue. And therefore, He acts as our suhrit, our dearmost friend. And satam, we become situated in sat. We become devotees of Krishna just by that very process. And there's this word abhadrani in the verse. Abhadrani. Just like abhadra and bhadra and subhadra. There's bhadra, that's auspicious, and abhadra is inauspicious. So all that is abhadra is cleansed from the heart. Vidhunoti is cleansing. So it's not exactly like Krishna becomes a janitor and gets out a broom and cleans our heart. Rather, by His presence, when we become open to being conscious of Him and being in a loving relationship with Him, by our turning our attention to Him, Prabhupada gives the example, just like by looking at light instead of having your back to the light, when your back is to the sun, you see shadow. And when you turn your face to the sun, you see light. Very simple. So, by giving our attention to Krishna through the process of hearing and chanting about Him, He, being situated within the heart, cleanses all the abhadras. All the abhadras, all that is inauspicious within the heart, cleansed by that chanting process. I think I'll spend a little bit of time going through a list of some of the categories of abhadras. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Again, this is a reference to the Madhurya Kandambani discussion that we had, where he describes before the stage of steady devotional service, there's an unsteady stage, or anishtita bhakti, and there are characteristics of unsteadiness, or the obstacles, or the abhadras within our heart. And I'll go through them very quickly. There's a list of six of them. Fine, thank you. So, first is, and they're in sequence. Utsaha mayi. Enthusiasm that's illusory or pretentious enthusiasm or immature enthusiasm. So like in the very beginning stage of devotional service, someone may try to do something, maintain a standard devotional service that's way beyond their capacity. And it's nice to try to do something that's has lots of enthusiasm behind it, but if you can't sustain it, then it's utsaha mayi. The example that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives is a small child, when they're first entering their education program, they're thinking, I've mastered everything. Well, it's not so, but they may have that confidence, that false enthusiasm. If this child can be directed towards the door, that would be nice. See you later. Much later. But when one realizes, oh, I haven't mastered my studies, or my enthusiasm doesn't reach this capacity, then there's another stage where there's intermittent enthusiasm and complacency. Ganatarla is the term, which literally means thick and thin. So sometimes on Ekadasi, I observe Nirjala Ekadasi, and I'm like very fired up. And some days, the opposite. It's a struggle to get through Ekadasi or something. Intermittent enthusiasm and withdrawing from that position. A third is Vyudha Vikalpa, which is excessive speculation. And a very funny rendering that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives. He's presenting the thinking of a young man about whether he should become married or stay brahmachari. And he goes through all the thought processes, why he should remain brahmachari. And then he's thinking, well, but actually, and goes through all the reasons why he should become married, and says, yes, but I should at least give it a try, and goes back and forth and back and forth. And it's very humorous. Excessive speculation about what I should do. The next two is being unable to make improvements in my devotional service when I know there's a very clear path of something that if I do something will improve my devotional service. And another is being unable to rid oneself of something that's unwanted. They're related, but one is a positive and the other is being unable to remove some negative. And the final is Taranga Rangani, where one is finally becoming a little successful in spiritual life, a little successful, and with that little success in spiritual life, there's the fruits of that spiritual success in the form of some honor, some distinction, some special position, and one becomes the enjoyer, or wants to become the enjoyer of that. Ranga means wave, and Rangini is a diminutive of wave, like Lord Ranganath. He's the Supreme Lord who's riding on the milk ocean. So Rangini is a small wave, and Taranga Rangini, one tries to be the enjoyer of the little waves of success in spiritual life. Labha, puja, and pratishtha. Something. Wanting to be the enjoyer of those things. So that's it's an impurity, it's an abhadra, it's a contamination that the process of hearing and chanting, when done properly means with this eagerness that was mentioned before, then gradually that those stages of impurities can be overcome. Then comes the next verse, text 18. Nashta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtuki. So, again, here's this word abhadreshu. So the abhadras are prayeshu. Prayeshu is an important word. Prayeshu means almost completely. Like earlier in the first chapter of the first canto, there's a verse that says, prayenal payushak shabya kalavasman yuge jana Mandaksha mandamatayo mandabhagya upadbruta. I recited that earlier. And prayena is the same root, prayeshu. It says that in this age of Kali, all good qualities are practically destroyed, almost destroyed to the point of nil. That's what the age of Kali does. And what the process of hearing and chanting does is it eradicates almost completely. And almost completely means you continue, it'll do it completely. But it's a stage in the course of the unfolding of the stages of bhakti, the stage of nishtha. This is, it's following the same line, what the Bhagavatam is saying, is the same, following the same line as what Rupa Goswami says, or vice versa. What Rupa Goswami says is following the same line as the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because there's a stage of bhakti where one becomes very fixed in their practice of devotional service. And proceeding, what are the stages that precede becoming fixed? The first stage is preliminary faith, adau shraddha, sadhu sangha, bhajana kriya, anartha nivritti, then nishtha. So this verse is already up to that number five, the nishtha stage, according to the list of Rupa Goswami. Nashta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavat. This naishtaki, bhaktir bhavati. Naishtaki, when come to that nishtha stage, where it's steady. Steady means, in that nishtha stage, there may still be some small amount of contamination, that is, a tendency to act apart from Krishna. But in that stage, bhakti is so strong, it doesn't get a chance to manifest itself, because bhakti eliminates it quickly. But there may be some residual impurity or residual tendency for material involvement, material association, and so on. But the process very effectively eradicates all of that. Here's the translation. By regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam and by rendering service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed. And loving service unto the Personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, Uttama Shloka, is established as an irrevocable fact. Because at this nishtha stage, bhakti continues. It's possible that one can fall, one can just desist, or slacken their submission due to laziness or complacency or worldly mindedness. It's possible. But if what generally, if one simply continues, then that the force of bhakti just carries one to the subsequent stages. Here's Srila Prabhupada describing this in his purport. Here is the remedy for eliminating all inauspicious things within the heart, which are considered to be obstacles on the path of self-realization. The remedy is association with the Bhagavatas. There are two types of Bhagavatas, namely the book Bhagavata and the devotee Bhagavata. Both the Bhagavatas are competent remedies, and both of them, or either of them, can be good enough to eliminate the obstacles. A devotee Bhagavata is as good as the book Bhagavata, because the devotee Bhagavata, leads his life in terms of the book Bhagavata. And the book Bhagavata is full of information about the personality of Godhead and his pure devotees, who are also Bhagavatas. Bhagavata book and Bhagavata person are identical. The word Bhagavata comes from Bhagavan, and Bhagavata means in relation to Bhagavan. So there's the devotee who is in relation to Bhagavan, and there's the book, the narration of the activities of Bhagavan, who is in relation to, or which is in relation to Bhagavan, or is a sound vibration manifestation of the personality of Godhead. So these are additional stages mentioned from, we'll go back, the eagerness to worship the Supreme Krishna, Bhajanesho Spriha, awakens bhakti further, and the disappearance of obstacles also follows. Bhaktir bhavati naishtaki. Bhaktir bhavati. Bhakti becomes manifest. Bhakti arises. And anartha is very similar to abhadra, artha and anartha, things that are wanted and things that are unwanted. The obstacles on the path of devotional service, they're unwanted. And the process of bhakti itself eradicates the obstacles. That's good news. We don't have to do something separate. We need to focus on the process of bhakti. Part of a subset of the process of bhakti is we may be attentive to, let's say, not speaking prajalpa, not speaking idle gossip. But it's not just checking yourself from something that you shouldn't do. It's on the strength of trying to please Krishna, on the strength of devotion to Krishna, there's some things that are just not appropriate or offerable to Krishna. So they're eliminated. On the point I want to make is, the process of devotional service is to put the horse before the cart, not the cart before the horse. What pulls the cart is the horse. What pulls the process of eradication of unwanted things is the bhakti process, the hearing and chanting process. So, another way of saying the same thing, we are not the International Society of Behavior Modification Incorporated. We're the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And so the activities of hearing and chanting, the sadhana process that we have, bhajana kriya activities that we have, that's the horse, and it pulls the cart. The impurities of heart are eradicated by that. So if we want to become, we don't become anartha conscious, we become Krishna conscious. We become conscious of the process of devotional service and trying to please Krishna, and following behind that comes whatever efforts we may have to make ourselves more fit and pure. But we should know from the Bhagavatam that it's Krishna from within the heart who's doing that. Otherwise, we're helpless. What can we do? Make fools of ourselves. We're pretty good at it. But Krishna is the agent, or by his kindness and mercy, that those impurities become eradicated. So then, tata nishta. Steadiness is achieved. That naishtaki term, the last word in the verse, is that nishtha stage. So the final verse for this evening is text 19. We can chant together. Tatarajas tamo bhava kamalo bhadayas cheta ekaya anavidham stitkam sate prasidati. This is speaking specifically about the involvement with the modes of nature. And when the modes of nature, particularly the lower modes of nature, rajas and tamas, subside. But it's very natural. If you come in contact, just like we mentioned before, Krishna is the supreme pure. And when you come in contact with the supreme pure, you become pure. That which is impure becomes purified by contact with the supreme pure. Prabhupada gives this example. What happens when the sun comes in contact with a contaminated place? He gave the example, a puddle of urine. What happens? Does the sun become contaminated, or does the contaminated place become purified? The contaminated place becomes purified. The water becomes evaporated, the impurity remains behind. The sun doesn't become contaminated. So Krishna doesn't become contaminated by our association. It works the other way. We become purified by Krishna's association. So the influence of the lower modes of nature, rajas and tamas, are reduced by the degree of contact that we make with Krishna. So by degree of contact, I mean, it's like there's a fire and we're over here. The closer you get to the fire, it gets warmer. Warmer. Red hot as blazing fire. But if we stand very far away, we don't get warm very quickly. So we need to, this eagerness in hearing and chanting helps us become cleansed rapidly and completely. Completely the influence of the modes of passion and ignorance become eradicated. Here is Srila Prabhupada speaking on this from the purport of text 19. The soul's activity becomes adulterated in contact with matter, and as such, the diseased activities are expressed in the form of lust, desire, hankering, inactivity, foolishness, and sleep. The effect of devotional service becomes manifest by complete elimination of these effects of passion and ignorance. The devotee is fixed at once in the mode of goodness, and he makes further progress to rise to the position of Vasudev, or the state of unmixed sattva, Shuddha sattva. Only in this Shuddha sattva state can one always see Krishna eye to eye by dint of pure affection for Krishna. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that the fact that Sutta Goswami is mentioning these lower modes of nature specifically is an indication that it's not easy to get rid of their influence. Supposing someone has an anger tendency, or a lust propensity, supposing that's there. How do you get rid of that? If it's a tendency, that the mode of nature has a strong grip, what do you do? The emphasis is on the process itself, the process of hearing and chanting with this eagerness and the cleansing of the heart by the Lord from within the heart, and through the process of hearing and chanting, the modes of nature lift and bring one to the position of stittam satve prasidati. One becomes naturally situated in the quality of goodness. It happens. again referring to how Srila Prabhupada began the Hare Krishna movement, the audience he had was not an audience of goodness. But they were brought or elevated to the quality of goodness just by the hearing and chanting. And gradually, the contaminations of bad habit was cleansed away by the process itself, their association with Srila Prabhupada and the messages that he was giving and the process of devotional service, starting with chanting Krishna's holy name. It cleansed those contaminations of the lower modes of nature, and one becomes then situated in this quality of goodness. So the next two, the total list is 14, and we're already at 9 and 10. Ruchi. When one, this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's explanation, that where there's a dislike, starting with a slackening of liking, but a dislike of worldly things, just like not interested, that's possible. We know this from Bhagavad Gita. You can't give up a lower taste just by saying no to it, but if you have a higher taste, it's easy to say no to it. What's the verse from Bhagavad Gita? Pram drishtva navartate raso varjam prasopyasya pram drishtva navartate vishaya vinivartante niraharisha dehinam raso varjam prasopyasya pram drishtva navartate. Little example. There's a devotee in New York. I don't know if you... One of the things that... I'm not from New York. I spent a fair part of my life there, but I don't identify with being a New Yorker. But something that I've noticed about New Yorkers is they pride themselves about knowing about everything. Ask about anything and they'll know something about everything. And they'll think of themselves as authorities about almost anything. And one of the things about New York is there's lots of cultural activity. All kinds of serious to silly and everything in between. So one of the devotees, who's a little older, it shared this with me that she had a friend, another New Yorker intellectual friend, that their relationship was based upon once a month they would get together and go to some cultural thing in New York. It was like, you know, and then they would spend the evening talking about the cultural things that they just experienced and what their lives are dabbling in. So they, this is...
Excuse me, can you take me over, please? Thank you.
They had been doing this, thank you. They had been doing this for like, you know, 25, 30 years or something like that. Then this devotee became a devotee. And then their friend called them up and said, it's that time of the month, let's go to, there's something happening at Lincoln Center or the Philharmonic, let's... And the devotee said, I don't really want to go. I'd rather stay home and read Srimad Bhagavatam. What? What's happened to you? You're not fun anymore. Are you brainwashed? Or, you know, it's... But the devotees, you know, they weren't moved. It's just like, I don't want to do that stuff anymore. Although their life was made up of that stuff. It's just, there's no taste for it. I wasn't... Someone telling them, don't do this, that's Maya. They knew it was Maya, but you know, they just didn't have any taste for it. It wasn't difficult to say, no, thank you. Because when there's a higher taste, there's no interest in the lesser taste. It's not a difficult thing, because I travel frequently. In America, it's now, you have to buy food. And, you know, Southwest Airlines gives peanuts. Literally. A little bag of peanuts. And it's free. But in India, even you like, you're flying to some place and there's a stop someplace and then you go to the next place, they have to have a meal both times.
Not in all airlines anymore.
Well, it's common. It's not all the airlines. Indian Airlines still does it. So if you want to go to Chennai, you go through Hyderabad to Chennai or to Tirupati. Through Hyderabad to Tirupati. So from Delhi to Hyderabad is a meal. From Hyderabad to Tirupati, it's a meal. So the people, they come down the aisle and they say, veg or non-veg? And the answer I give them is no, thank you. They go, well, do you want anything? No, thank you. You can give me some water. Okay. And it's not a big, oh, I wish I had some of the non-veg. Or some of the veg. And when they take the top off, it just smells awful. But to speak, it's not prasadam. And who's cooked it and what condition? The person's body and mind and clothing and language and who knows? Because when you're cooking, Nectar of Instruction, Prabhupada explains, the consciousness of the person preparing the food goes into the food. And when you eat the food cooked by that someone, you're partaking of their consciousness. They've transferred their consciousness to you through the act of eating. So be very careful when you're eating food that's not prepared by a devotee. Or better to say, don't take food that's not prepared by a devotee. Take food that's prepared by a devotee and offer to Krishna. And not otherwise. That's a principle. But when you have that satisfaction of, it's not just it tastes nice, it's prasadam. And to have something other than that, it's just, there's not an attraction for something other than that. Like that. The stage of detachment from the modes of nature happens naturally by association with Krishna. It's no longer attractive by a natural process. That's what this verse is describing. Okay. So, I'll end there and see if we have some comments or discussion. Whatever you like, you have good questions. We got a microphone for you.
Yesterday we had a discussion about Brahma forgetting who Krishna was. And then you said Brahma was inspired by Krishna to forget. Are you able to hear me?
Yes, I can hear you properly.
Okay.
Thank you.
But my question is, what if the Lord Himself forgets who He is?
Oh, that's a very interesting speculation.
I was surprised when I read that Rama did not realize that he was Vishnu even when he got back to Brahmaloka. Actually, he forgets to go to Vaikuntha.
Where did you read that?
This is
Chitra comic book or something?
No, this is Uttar Ramayana, Valmiki Ramayana. So he goes to Brahmaloka, then Rama reminds him that you have to go to Vaikuntha. And all the other
Vanaras
will send them to
Santa Nikaloka. I don't recall reading that anywhere.
I read the Sanskrit verses as well. So
okay.
Yeah,
okay. Well, I can tell you something from Srimad Bhagavatam 10th canto where Krishna forgets and how does that happen? You want to hear that one? Okay. perhaps the same principle applies if this is a valid rendering of Valmiki Ramayana. So, when the cowherd boys, twice, once is when the cowherd boys entered into the mouth of Agasura. Krishna became filled with anxiety. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But he forgot himself. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was just in anxiety about the cowherd boys. But his anxiety wasn't just that they were in danger, because he knew he could rescue them from any danger. His anxiety was, if they couldn't see him for some period of time, they might just give up their lives. So that way their safety was at risk. So he wanted to tell them to stop, but because that short interval of time had passed when he had forgotten himself, then entered the mouth of the Agasura demon, it was too late. The commentators explain that just as Krishna's pastimes are being enacted by his yogamaya potency, to enrich the happiness and pleasure of Krishna by yogamaya acts by Krishna's will, that yogamaya potency covered Krishna for a brief moment and again receded. And another example is when in the Kaliya Leela, the cowherd boys and the cows went ahead of Krishna to get water from the Jamuna River. And they drank the Jamuna River that was poisoned, and they all were on the ground as if dead. And when Krishna came and saw his dear friends and the dear cows lying on the ground as if dead, he forgot himself. In great feelings of separation from his dear friends and the cows. Again, yogamaya, to enrich the happiness and pleasure of Krishna, allowed him to forget himself and his divinity, which in then again in a moment receded, and Krishna simply glanced over them and they came back to life again. So those are two examples from Krishna's Leela where yogamaya potency is allowing Krishna to forget himself momentarily for his own pleasure. So maybe something similar in Ramayana, whatever that description you gave. Right? Anyone else? Something a little less esoteric, please. Way in the back.
The morning class you were saying the offenses.
Which?
The Vaishnava Prat or Nama Prat.
Yeah.
Deva Prat.
Yes.
So this is just the most serious offense. All the offenses.
You want me to go over that again? Is that what you're saying? Oh, is Vaishnav Aparad is one of the 10 Nama Aparads.
Oh.
It's a subset. Say anger management? Which class were you attending?
The difficulty of... Okay. So the remedy for it is just hearing and chanting as per the verses, or the devotee has to take some special precautions or some special treatment so that... hearing
situation.
Some devotees need some special treatment.
He should get married.
Anger management? Is marriage is anger management? Or anger provocation or something. The message that I was delivering, and I'll deliver it one more time, is the cart is not pulling the horse, but the horse is pulling the cart. You remember that one, right? So the horse that's pulling the cart is the process of bhakti. When the process of bhakti is pulling the cart, then there's this load of abhadras, including such things as the contact with the mode of passion, because it's the contact with the mode of passion that creates desire, right? Kamesha, Krodesha, Rajo Guna, Samudbhava. And when desire is frustrated, then comes Kroda. So the solution is get out of passion. Passionately get out of passion. No. By transcendence, get out of by cultivation of the quality of goodness, relieve yourself of passion. So focusing on goodness, not just the management of the anger, is the scriptural solution. So if you're wanting to please Krishna and you have an anger problem, that's the mode of passion. Focus on transcendence, focusing on pleasing Krishna. And one of the ways that you must please Krishna is to rid yourself of this anger tendency. So then there are recommendations. Following behind the horse, there's some recommendations of things that you can do, like cultivate goodness, practice forgiveness, etc. You want to keep going with that one? Or you're going to hand out the microphone to someone else? Oh, you already did. Okay. Okay. Up here, put your hand up.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. The six categories of abhadras that we discussed today, do they have a specific relation to the stage that we are in?
Yes. The stage that we're in is the stage of unsteady bhakti, trying to get to the stage of steady bhakti. So it's not like that list that I gave. They're not buckets, and you're either in this bucket or that bucket or that bucket, but there's a spectrum of things that we have tendencies for, and it's relevant to us. So like, let's say, knowing what are those activities that we should relieve ourselves of, but not having the strength of determination to relieve ourselves of those things. That's relevant. It's a stage of unsteadiness. So you can beat yourself up because you're not, sufficiently matching that standard, or you can strengthen your hearing and chanting so that your determination becomes stronger, your spiritual strength becomes stronger, and the capacity to overcome that shortcoming becomes greater on the strength of hearing and chanting. Now, we still do something, like this other question. We still need to do something. We don't just like let our anger go or let our lust go or, it's okay because I'm just hearing and chanting, it's going to go away. We do something. We keep ourselves away from that which is going to provoke this impure tendency, and fix ourselves in hearing and chanting, etc. Okay?
Thank you.
All right. Pick a hand, whoever you want. Okay.
This is related to what was mentioned in the previous session, I think. That in Bhagavad Gita it is said that if you have, this is about who gets the chance to get mercy of the devotee.
Okay.
Are you able to hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
So, one who has done something in previous lifetimes gets a chance in the next lifetime by the...
That's a guarantee. But supposing somebody hasn't done something in their previous lifetime,
right,
are they ineligible?
Yeah, that's where you talk about the causeless mercy.
Yeah, causeless mercy.
Yeah.
But even if there's been some previous, it's not like you twisted Krishna's arm and now he's got to do it. It's still voluntary. It's still causeless mercy. Causeless, the way that Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur has described causeless is that bhakti is the cause of bhakti, and in that sense it's causeless. Meaning it's not something material that's causing. There's no obligation, but it's just the mercy of the devotee that brings that about. In that sense, causeless.
So another way somebody can ask about this, so is it random that one person gets the mercy and someone else doesn't? Because we say that nothing is random in this world.
Well, it's the free will of the Madhyama Bhakta that's the determinant. So if we don't go out and harinam and distribute books and preach Krishna consciousness, it's not going to happen. Or, conversely, the more that we do such things, hold festivals and connect people to the... give them the chance, create opportunities for contacting Krishna Katha, that's increasing the possibility. But it's in our hand. Krishna's given us that power of attorney. So did we get the message or not? And if we got the message, then we're performing those activities. And if not, then we're not. So that decreases the possibility. It's dependent upon the Madhyama Bhakta.
So in that sense, this becomes like really the only causeless or the thing in the world, because otherwise that's what we say, everything else is by dying or has a cause, right?
Well, Krishna is the cause of all causes. That's also true. Don't get hung up on semantics. Just go on Sankirtan and everything's nice.
Another question I had was,
about the difference between material and spiritual knowledge as such. Material knowledge is not natural to us, but spiritual knowledge of who I am is inherent and natural,
yep,
to us.
Exactly.
But you also say that spiritual knowledge, although it is inherent to us, it can only be achieved by through somebody else who is in it, who is a bona fide teacher, but not by ourselves. Right? So
not by ascending, but by descending process.
Yeah, because otherwise the tendency would be, this is just for preaching purpose, somebody might say, because it is inherent within me, then I should be able to get it myself.
Yeah, but there's a lock on the box. And somebody else has the key. Although it is inherent. Okay?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
So today we are discussing about the five stages of bhakti.
Yeah.
In that first stage, Sadhana Kripa, we were discussing that somehow receiving cosmic mercy of devotees is very important.
Very important.
But unfortunately, because we have tendency to become familiar with the Vaishnavas, it blocks the second stage, Mahatseva, or service to those devotees. So how to be
familiar? Don't become familiar. And what the prevention is respect. Respect. Respect is nice besides. But it's just that's it's something like the deity is up on an altar. I mean, the platform, and then up on an altar, and up on a little part that they're standing on top of. So we're down here, and the deity's up there. Now, the pujaris, they're more proximate. And with that proximity, there's the risk of familiarity. We're safe, we're down here. So they're taking that service that has some risk of familiarity, at least potentially, by being proximate. So the protection of against familiarity is respect. Those who are doing deity worship should hold that very strongly. Or one who does personal service for the spiritual master. It was one of the things with when I was a very new devotee, there was a very staunch brahmachari named Aravind Daksha, nice devotee, and he was one of those devotees that when Prabhupada wanted a group to go to India to do the world Harinam thing, he went. Later on, he became Prabhupada's servant, and after some time, he fell. And it was that same person, when I was initiated, was reading the names, you know, because it was initiation, and Prabhupada had somebody take care of that service, and their non-devotee name and their devotee name. So he was reading out the devotee name. When it came to my name, he read out the name, and Prabhupada said no. It gave a different name. And Aravind Daksha looked at Prabhupada and said, "It says right here," like in that tone. And I thought, he's finished. And he was. He was, because of familiarity, he had lost his respect. And he fell. And the whole line of persons having that wonderful service of serving Srila Prabhupada, not being properly, or to say it conversely, those that endured is because they maintained healthy respect. But when you have intimacy, you can lose respect, like in marriage, or friendship, or congregation, or living together. It's one thing to have a friend that lives over there, try living together. A whole other thing starts to happen when you get close. But so the protection is respect. And one should be very clear what it is that one is respecting. Not just like, you know, an ideal. It's the person's attraction for Krishna. We respect that. And their sincere desire to get closer to Krishna. We respect that. So they have some shortcomings, just like I do. So that's okay. I respect this, and let me support this, and be of service to help with that. If we stay in the mood of service and be respectful, we're protected. You lose those two, and you're finished. Yes.
When it
eagerness to hear together.
Yes.
So when we go back home and we're just going to busy life.
Business as usual.
How to maintain the same enthusiasm?
Become Krishna conscious. Come to the spontaneous platform of devotional service. Keep, you know, let's see how it goes like this. There's the sine curve. So as you advance, what happens is the line starts to go like this. And the amplitude of the ups and the downs start to level off and it becomes steady. So what we need is to make advancement in Krishna consciousness and come to that steady stage. So we seek opportunities like you just described, where we can come together and hear and chant together, and it's very enlivening. Just visiting some devotees today, and they described from the Japa retreat for June, July, August, for 3 months, their japa was and then and now it's they want to go back up again. So, you know, some opportunity to come together and focus and rise early, and, you know, part of it is circumstance, but part of it is what, just like you described. By gradual advancement in Krishna consciousness, that the plane of the axis starts to go up. If we're applying the process properly. So continue applying the process and make advancement. So by Krishna consciousness, it becomes steady. Okay, it's after 9 o'clock. I think we'll end there. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
We'll reconvene in the morning at 7 o'clock sharp. Hare Krishna.